Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast. Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
This week on Earth Ancients, we travel to Atlantis. We look at the lives of people who have lived there through their soul's memory. These are the reincarnations of people who, through hypnotherapy, reveal the tragedies of devastation, the technology, the machines, the creatures that were created back then, and also Atlantis and its connection with Lemuria. This is also called Mu. This is a different type of look that Edgar Cayce presented to us in the 1920s through his readings of people who had lived in Atlantis and their daily activities. Today, we come full circle with a hypnotist and her new book, A Hypnotist's Journey to Atlantis. All this and more on Earth Ancients. Saturday, April 2nd, 2022. This is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. This week we look at Atlantis, but we look at it from the subconscious mind. The Hindus, in their great history, believe that we don't live one time, we live multiple lives. In fact, many people believe we live tens of thousands of lifetimes, and through reincarnation, we live, we experience a lifetime, and then we die, we assess our life, and then we come back. Sometimes we come back to Earth, sometimes we go to other planets, sometimes we go to other dimensions. And today we are going to hear about a series of lifetimes that happened in a place called Atlantis. Now, the last time we talked about this was regarding Edgar Cayce, who was known as the Sleeping Prophet. And in the 1920s, all the way up until his passing in 1945, he would go into a trance and read the lifetimes of his clients. And these lifetimes, primarily, I'd say, I think it was like 3,000 plus readings he gave, were of people who lived in the place we know today as Atlantis. So accurate were his readings that in many times people came to resolve illness, emotional problems, and he would provide remedies. He was considered the first natural healer because his remedies involved natural foods, rest, exercise, combinations of minerals and vitamins, which back in the 20s were very rudimentary, but they still had ways to get a hold of them. And he would heal people based on these imbalances with these natural remedies. He was very, very, very accurate. Later, we discovered that he was working with these people's subconscious minds and was able to tap into one or more lifetimes in Atlantis. He also was very informative because other than Plato's description of Atlantis, which was the last phase of it, he described three phases. The first phase was a couple hundred thousand years up to, into 50,000, and then there was a calamity, a catastrophe. A second phase that was 50 to 28,000 years, and then there was another calamity. And then the final phase led right up to approximately 12,000 years ago when what was remaining of Atlantis was destroyed. Now, we look at this from a skeptic's eye as to what the information is. There's no way really to validate it. We can kind of piece a little bit of what Plato has to say in his writings regarding the land of Atlantis and the various capitals and the various cities and things. But we have to go with hearsay, and that's basically the information he provides. My guest today is a psychologist who was also trained as a hypnotist. And she is working with a specific group of people who are able to actually move beyond the physical into previous lifetimes that were significant in Atlantis. And as you'll hear today, these are not casual lifetimes. These are lifetimes of significant importance because what happens is that the lifetimes bleed into the present. And if they aren't resolved, traumatic events aren't resolved, illnesses, angers, fears, and so on, they bleed into the present and can cause all kinds of physical issues. And so the therapist, in this case, the hypnotist, is all about bringing forth this data and helping the client resolve them, which is fascinating. Now, we don't have a lot of people that are doing this right now, and this is kind of advanced in many ways. So this is our program today. The title is A Hypnotist's Journey to Atlantis. And she, the author who is our guest today, has written a couple of books on that topic, on Atlantis. And another book has just come out on the Egyptian Sphinx and its importance to prehistory. So you're going to have to stretch a little bit today. Not too bad, but you'll have to stretch a little bit to take this in. I was fascinated by the interview, and you can hear my excitement in my voice because a lot of this stuff rings true. And you can't, you know, I can't look at it logically and say, well, yes, it rings true because I have books that say similar things, or I have literature, I have cuneiforms, and I have data. I don't. It's just one of those intuitional things. So I think you're going to find this quite a unique program. Now, I found a History Channel description of Edgar Cayce's work that I want to play. It's a short excerpt from a program that was played a few years ago on just how important Edgar Cayce, his work was, and also why he is considered the best evidence for a lost civilization that we call Atlantis. So let's have a quick listen.
Virginia Beach, Virginia, 1932. American psychic and healer Edgar Cayce, known as the Sleeping Prophet, gains worldwide attention by remotely diagnosing illnesses in patients located hundreds of miles away with an astounding degree of accuracy.
He could diagnose people's physical problems. He could tell you what's in a book. He could find something at a great distance. He could even read the Akashic Record, the Book of Life.
During one of his many psychic trances, Casey makes an astonishing claim regarding the Sphinx.
Edgar Casey could tell you about prehistory and reincarnation and what your soul had been doing prior to this incarnation. He actually gave readings for his own soul that had been a high priest in ancient Egypt and was directly associated with the building of the Sphinx.
Edgar Casey had in his readings a statement that the Sphinx and the pyramids were built in approximately 10,490 BC. There's a strong suggestion that the Casey readings were accurate, and therefore their dating of the Sphinx and the pyramids also was accurate.
Up until his death in 1945, Casey gave dozens of readings about the Sphinx. These readings claimed the Sphinx was directly related to an ancient civilization that many believe once existed here on Earth, the lost continent of Atlantis.
The Edgar Casey readings specifically say that Atlantis, as recorded by Plato, was not a myth. He leaked that information given to him by the Egyptian priesthood and put it into his books, the Timaeus and the Critias.
Here's the interesting thing. Plato describes that Atlantis existed exactly at the same time that ancient Egypt experienced what they referred to as a golden age.
If the Casey readings about the existence of Atlantis are true, then might the Sphinx actually be a remnant from this advanced civilization? Perhaps further clues to this connection can be found with yet another Casey prophecy regarding the Sphinx.
Casey dreamed that under the right paw of the Sphinx, there was a chamber at a very specific place that apparently hold the Hall of Records from the lost civilization of Atlantis, which Casey felt he was a direct part of.
When Atlantis was sinking, the Atlanteans were aware of the importance of saving these records. And they also were aware of the need to hide the records of prehistory.
If we locate the original Hall of Records, we would be essentially accessing the equivalent of a Google search engine, but it's the Atlantean internet. So the Sphinx is an entry point that could reveal once and for all that humankind is much older on Earth than we thought.
Now, we're not advanced enough to understand the various dimensions of the soul, of the subconscious. I mean, Freud termed subconscious mind, or presented us with the term subconscious mind, and was really the only one who write about it after, for a number of years. Wilhelm Reich would later publish additional books on it, but we don't take in this information well because our current scientific paradigm doesn't recognize subtle energy or dimensional travel. Or, I mean, quantum physics theorizes about quantum or about dimensional other dimensions, but not reincarnation, not the subconscious and other lifetimes. That's just it's too much for them. They can't go there. But this program today, as I mentioned, forces you to stretch your imagination a little bit and consider places like Atlantis. Now, the other thing that's going to come up today is Lemuria or Mu. And according to many of the readings, at some point, Lemuria and Atlantis were around at the same time. It's been noted by many Native Americans and other researchers, including Dr. Susan Martinez, that the final destruction of Lemuria came about around 28,000 years ago. So No paperwork on that, no documents, no standing stones with that information. We have to go by hearsay on that. So what makes that interesting is that we have, and you'll hear this today, we have evidence, a discussion on a very, very ancient place in the Pacific known as Lemuria or Mu, and the information on the descendants or people who actually lived on the continent of Atlantis. So kind of an interesting twist on some of the past people we've had speaking on Atlantis and the qualities of Atlantis and how life was and all the details. So that's our program today, A Hypnotist's Journey to Atlantis.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So when we talk about Atlantis, we only can look at it from what we know from Plato and, luckily, the work of Edgar Cayce. Edgar Cayce, in my mind, is one of the most profound educators simply because he was a what they call a sleeping prophet, and he would channel this data from his higher consciousness. But most people don't accept that simply because he can't prove it. We're very linear in our understanding and our teachings. We don't teach people that other levels of consciousness are valid, but I think his work is outstanding. Since Edgar Cayce, we really haven't had much turn in the way of, I guess you could call it subconscious revelation work until now and my guest today. And I fell on these books, or I discovered these books just a few weeks ago. And I was impressed not only with the clarity of the work, but the work itself is very important and actually takes us to the next level. My guest today is Sarah Breskman Cosmi, and she has written two books that we're going to talk about today: A Hypnotist's Journey to Atlantis, and the other book, which I have in hard copy, which is The Hypnotist's Journey to Secrets of the Sphinx. I got to say that slowly. And Sarah is wonderful. She is a practitioner of Dolores Cannon's QHHT technique, as well as Dr. Brian Weiss's programming and therapy techniques. And she herself is unique in many ways, because I think the beauty of these techniques is that you take them and you make them your own. And what she has created in her work is fabulous. So, hey, Sarah, welcome to Earth Ancients. Great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, let's go to the beginning. You studied to become a psychologist. You're working with people. And I have to say this. You're working in institutions that are with mentally ill people, classified as mentally ill. And you're kind of going, and I'm reading this from your book, you're kind of going, I don't like the results. I don't like what I'm doing. This is not working for me. Talk about that.
Oh my gosh, I've always just wanted to help other people because I had so many problems. I mean, growing up, I was a huge mess. I was overweight. I had fears and phobias, all kinds of problems. I was like one of those people you feel sorry for. You think, oh my gosh, she has so many problems. That was me. And so I went to regular therapy to try to fix myself. And I never really felt like it worked for me, although it was really wonderful. But I thought that that was the only way to help people. So that's why I got into therapy. I wanted to become a psychologist. So I set out to become that in order to help people, thinking that was the only way. That was the leading edge of thought. And when I got to college, something really mind-blowing happened to me. So it was a couple months after I started school. I went back home to my parents' house to visit for Thanksgiving. And when I walked through the door, there was a mirror that you see when you walk through. And I looked at myself and my jaw dropped because while I was away, I completely forgotten to have my problems. Now, I had been in traditional therapy for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. I had tried all kinds of techniques to help me like lose weight, like feel better about myself, like get over these fears and sleep better. I mean, I even had OCD, which thank God that disappeared too. Wow. But when I looked at myself, I realized that this was so huge. It was like one of those aha moments that changes your whole life. And I realized as I was I was in shock, literally, because I hadn't realized occurring that I had changed my thoughts. Like I had changed my environment and I had changed my thought patterns. And that was what I needed to do to change my life. It was so humongous. But still, I continued. I went to school. And after I graduated, before going to graduate school, I had a job where I was a counselor at one of those places that you were talking about for mentally ill people. And my job was to give them medication, all the medications. Yeah. I'd learned so much about these amazing medications, apparently, and then counseling techniques that I knew so much about. And within about a week, I felt as if every single thing I had learned was a complete lie. I mean, not only did it seem like it didn't help anyone at all, but there were no success stories. I was there for a while. Nobody came in, got on these medications and left a better person. It was the opposite. They were people that had issues. Like some of them talked to aliens, some of them talked to angels, and they were heavily medicated. And not only that, they would come in thinking they were going to get some help for these, you know, thoughts coming into their mind. It never took it away. All it did was created a side effect from this medication that they had to take more medications for. And a lot of times I would start my shift, say at like 7 a.m. I would get there and my job was to medicate them, basically.
Oh, boy.
Within 45 minutes, they'd be drooling on the couch. This was their life. And I just thought, is this all there is to help people? There's got to be something more. I mean, this was the leading edge of thought. Are you serious? You know, there's got to be something more. So I quit. I did not become a psychologist. Instead, I learned eventually hypnosis. And that's how I got into hypnosis, basically because I wanted to help my sister-in-law. She was having issues. And I knew she could be helped with regression therapy.
Okay, let's talk about Brian first, because I know Brian personally, and his work's fascinating. And of course, his book, Many Minds, Many Masters, has been out for, I don't know, over 20 years now. What was your desire to begin looking at his regressive work and his technique?
Well, I started out just doing regular hypnosis. I became a master hypnotist in 2009, and I was doing lose weight, quit smoking, and past life regression. But I always wanted to do something that actually worked, and I realized that the past life regression, nothing wrong with the lose weight and quit smoking, but, you know, it was a lot harder. It was...
You said something very impactful, too. You said, I wanted something that worked. Well, obviously, your success rate wasn't very good.
But you know why? You know why? It's because you have to get to the root cause of the problem. So sometimes doing these like lose weight, quit smoking, hypnosis, it's just like putting a Band-Aid on cancer. It might work for a little while, you know, but you have to get to the root cause, the very root cause, and find out what that is. So I noticed right away when I started doing these different methods, these, you know, those different ways of hypnosis, that there was something that definitely worked with the past life regression. I mean, someone could Someone could come in and heal themselves with just one session, and they could heal so many different things. I mean, like migraines or body pain, you know, it was unbelievable. So I thought, oh my gosh, there's something to this. And that's when I decided to study with Brian Weiss, and he's so sweet, isn't he?
He's like a soft, gentle soul. Yeah, really is. Yeah,
he really is. And he's always like that. Even his wife says he's like that at home.
But was it his work with the subconscious mind that was appealing to you? Because this is a way to really get down to the fundamentals of who this individual is and these other lifetimes that are influencing the physical.
Definitely. I saw in his work that this method not only helped people heal their body, but they could heal on so many different levels. And that's what I felt like humanity needed. You know, this was a great method that I could use to help other people. And I love his method, and it's wonderful, but I felt like there was something missing in my life. And I contacted a psychic and I said, there's something missing in my life, but I don't know what it is. And she said, this is the easiest reading I've ever done. Everybody has so many different future potentials. But she said, Sarah, you know, this is the easiest reading. It's like so clear, and you know, that I'm seeing that you're going to do this QHHT method, Dolores Cannon's method.
Wow.
And you're going to get really good at that. You're going to help teach it. And then, oh my gosh, you're going to write books, and then you're going to speak at conferences. And I thought, oh my gosh, a psychic must have gotten me confused with the other person that came in, you know, after or before me. but it was very right on, apparently, because I found Dolores Cannon. And once I found her, that method just clicked with me the best. It was just everything I've been looking for.
So talk about the specifics of QHHT and how it, after you've regressed somebody, what comes up and how you work with it. So before we get into the meat of this interview, I think it's important that people understand what you do, how you use this with your clients.
So QHHT is different than regular past life regression, in that regular past life regression, you regress the client and you just simply bring them to a different lifetime where you try to find out the similarities in their current lifetime. And you kind of help them bridge that gap between what is going on right now, what happened back then. But in a QHHT session is totally different. The main goal of the session is to regress the client and bring them to the deepest level of trance, where you can then access their all-knowing, all-loving, higher consciousness. Mm-hmm. And in that way, you can make all these different changes, find out who a person really is, and you can even help them heal themselves.
Wonderful.
And it's very easy.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about your other clients before we get into Jen, who is the focal point for much of your work, because she's a special case on many levels. But prior to Jen and you learning this QHHT technique, talk about some of your early clients and some of the impressions that you got on the deep levels that you are acquiring with, you know, sending these people back.
Well, it was amazing. I mean, I was just always amazed when people would heal themselves or these other lifetimes. I felt like I had the best job in the world because I've just always been fascinated by this type of information, you know, and it gave me a different way of looking at life. I started to see life differently. I was never into spirituality before this. I didn't have a spiritual background whatsoever. So I started to learn from these higher consciousness that would come through my clients, the different ways of the cosmos, the different reasons why we're here. And it gave me a different outlook on my whole life And I started to notice changes within myself and seeing things in a different light, where I had a lot less fear. And I mean, I can't tell you how many clients I've regressed. I really don't know over the years, but for to have them all say the same things when you bring them to, you know, the death process, or when they leave their body in a life and they go do the same things, you know, and they talk about the same experiences over and over and over again, it gives you a different outlook on life and you start to understand your life more clearly.
Would you say that we call it the higher self, but would you say you're talking to people on their soul level, that that's the actual soul who's communicating with you and going, Sarah, this is what I saw. This is what's been going on. And damn it, that's just the way it is. And I got to fix it and come back later.
Yes, definitely. But what's so fascinating about it is when you're connecting to the soul in a QHHT session, you're also connecting to everybody else's soul, because it's actually connecting to universal consciousness, because at the very basic level, we're all one. So it makes it even more interesting, because when you leave your physical body, you're identified as an individual in the body. But as soon as a person leaves their physical body, they consider themselves a we. They just always do. And so after a person, you leave a person to past life through the death, they say we right after they've left their body, because you tap into that field of where everything is known and we're all one again.
Wonderful. All this orthodox training that you went through to become a psychologist must have gone out the window pretty quickly when you started doing these regressions, because, you know, a lot of this information is like so amazing and many times wonderful, but it's very advanced on not only a spiritual level, but on a just a basic living level, isn't it?
It is. I think I definitely see life so differently than regular people. But yeah, I had learned so much about these different techniques and psychology, and I basically had to just forget it all. I mean, some of it, of course, is beneficial, but I felt like there's just so much more, you know, and that was just scratching the surface. It's like putting the Band-Aid on cancer,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally. Reincarnation is a huge concept. A lot of people don't believe in it. I've had people on my show here that are traditionalists and they just say, no, I don't. I mean, when you die, that's it. Why is it important to understand the concept of reincarnation as a soul?
Well, I think everybody does literally have their own reality. That's what it seems like when people are regressed. So if you don't believe it, that could be true for you. Literally, it can be as simple as we each have a bubble of reality and we're creating our own reality in that sense. Because when I talk to these higher consciousness or these, you know, extraterrestrials, whatever you want to call it, that come through the subconscious of the client, they'll say that the real truth of reality is that this is just a game. So we're physically focused in this game, but we create it. We're creating it. Because when you leave your life and you go to the in-between, you realize that these worlds were just imagined, created for these experiences. So it's really not as serious as we make it.
Excellent. Okay, let's jump into this. We have a lot to talk about. I have to say that, have you read anything or heard any Edgar Cayce material at all? You must have.
No.
Oh, okay.
I've heard of him, but I haven't read.
I have to just tell you this. Your work is a breath of fresh air because, and there's two sides of it. First of all, you in your work actually validate what Cayce talks about, because he brings up the various levels of being a human, from the gaseous nothingness and then the essence moving into the bodies and then the various stages. And what he doesn't talk about, and we'll get into this, is that we are an experiment.
Yeah.
So before we get into that, which I've always kind of hinted, by the way, I was always kind of wondering about being an experiment, but we get a lot of different types talking about it. I want you to tell us about Jen. Now, from your description, she not only had a brain tumor, but she had electroshock treatment. She had psychological counseling. When you found her, when she came into your life, she had been beat up pretty good, hadn't she?
Well, the electric shock treatment was actually, that occurred in a past life the 1970s. But she did have a brain condition called pseudotumor cerebri, which was so devastating for her. We had been friends for about 10 years before we even did this session because I knew she wasn't into any of this stuff. She was a teacher at the kids' school and I knew her very, very well because we would sit after school and watch our kids play on the playground. And a lot of the people in my little community know what I do. And I don't go around and tell them all about like the universe and extraterrestrials or anything. I just keep it to myself unless they're interested, you know?
You mean you don't wear a big banner that says, I believe in aliens and you can come and talk to me anytime.
Then I would definitely not have any friends.
Where do you live? Oh, you're in Florida.
I'm in Florida.
Well, it's somewhat progressive. Well, maybe not. I don't know.
There's a lot of people, you would be surprised at how many people actually are really into this stuff. But totally. I'm not one of those people that goes around and shares information unless other people are interested. It just, with Jen, it was the same way. And I knew she wasn't into any of this stuff because sometimes when we were sitting on the playground, I would bring up a few things and she wasn't into it. So I knew she had never read a Dolores Cannon book. She did not know anything about Atlantis or Lemuria. In fact, she was scientific. She was the teacher. She was she taught history. So she was not into any of this stuff at all. In fact, when I brought up if she wanted to do a session with me, I thought she is going to think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But I had to find somebody and I was on the spot because I wanted to become a level 3 practitioner, which is the highest level you can get in QHHT. And they all of a sudden had a class in Orlando, which is close to me. And I wouldn't have to travel somewhere, but I had to find somebody to do a session on that I could record right away. And I didn't want to use a paying client because I felt those were just so, I don't know, private. I wanted to get a volunteer that wouldn't mind being, you know, videotaped. And I asked Jen, it was the first thought that popped into my mind. So I asked her, hey, will you be my subject for this class I'm taking? I have to videotape you, but we'll do this past life regression where, you know, you might see a past life and you can even, you know, find out information about yourself and you can heal yourself if you have any issues. And I thought, because she looked at me so funny, I thought, she thinks I'm crazy because maybe she doesn't realize that I do past life regression. See, she had volunteered for me to do a lose weight session on her a really long time before.
The hit and miss techniques. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't work. And so I thought, she is going to think I'm crazy that I'm into this past life regression stuff. And she just looked at me and said, oh my gosh, I didn't know that was what you were doing because I've been looking for something like this because I have issue going on and it's so devastating. She was only, I think she was 32 at the time and she was working very closely with this team of specialists at the University of Miami.
For this tumor condition.
Yes. Yeah. And they said there was a huge risk of a stroke. She probably had about 20 more years, give or take. She was going to have to stay on this heavy duty medication and there was no cure for it. That was it. That's all they could do for her. And so she was very excited about being my subject. She said, I will do this with you because of this condition I have. I don't care about the past life thing, whatever. Let's see what happens. Maybe if I can heal myself, I'll do it. And I thought to myself, I wonder what she's going to think about the past life part, because I asked her if she believed in reincarnation and she said she wasn't sure.
Yeah. So okay.
That was about to change.
So when you regressed her for the first time and you began speaking with her soul level consciousness, was it, was this consciousness expressive as it shows in the book immediately, or did it take a number of times for this really to begin coming out as fully as you write about?
Well, that first session that I put in the book is our first session.
Oh my God.
And I try to keep everything in all my books. I try to keep everything word for word. I change, you know, if there's two words here, there, because you can feel the energy that comes from these sessions. And that's very important, I feel.
Well, the session must have been hours. How many hours was it?
It was about, the very first session I had to do for the class.
Right.
So in total, with the talking and everything beforehand, it was about 5 hours.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I mean, she is the key individual, your client, Jen, for this work. And you got a lot out of her, a tremendous amount. So she must have been just waiting for you to show up on some level.
So we found out from her higher consciousness that the reason why she had this brain condition was to lead her to me, because we had planned before this incarnation to come together, uncover this information, and share this very important information with the world, because the world needs it now. Wow. That's what they told us.
Amazing.
And then once we did that, her brain condition was completely healed.
Which is fascinating how you write that. Apparently the tumor was, her kind of a tumor is filled with fluid. And you describe the tumor as actually the fluid leaving the tumor. And when they went to scan her brain after your sessions, the tumor had shrunk significantly.
Yes, they couldn't believe it. They just called it a medical miracle. That's all they could say about it.
Amazing. Let's get into it, because it's fascinating. We can't spend the whole show talking about every avenue of the book, but there's so many wonderful sections. Talk about early pre-human, the gaseous forms that she describes prior to incarnating physically. Apparently, what is it? I don't know. We can't even put a time on it. It's before Earth, as Earth was cooling. It was billions of years ago. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh, so fascinating. Of course, I was curious, because she was just an open book and I could find out anything. And are you talking about when I asked how this experiment even started?
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the beginning and let's let people know that we are apparently an experiment from a very ancient and an advanced culture. Let's get into that first.
Okay. Well, what I think is important to understand is we're all part of that. That's who we really are. We're all part of this ancient grouping of beings that have traveled from planet to planet to see what the next will bring. That's what we do. We go through a planet's life cycle. We leave it. We go to a different planet. Then we wait for that one planet to be better and go back to that planet. I mean, that's who we all are. This is not just like they did this and we did that. We're all part of that group. Apparently, that's what I get in sessions. But she went back to this time where she was coming to Earth for the very first time. And the reason they wanted to come as an extraterrestrial group, wanted to come to Earth here, because it was so full of these resources. They were looking for these special crystals, and they found these crystals on Earth. And what they could do with these crystals was that they could create these vortexes where they could enlighten themselves. And everybody that lived in this area of this planet that she was from, they had to go through this vortex at least once to enlighten themselves. And once they did, they would be shown the secrets of the universe, and they would lose all their insecurities, and they would be in a place of harmony with one another. But they were running out of this very special resource. On their planet, they had already advanced to the point where they didn't need to eat. They didn't need certain things that we humans need to do at this point. So that was what they did. They kept enlightening themselves and kept advancing themselves mentally. And so that was the most important thing for them. Go ahead.
And these are our ancestors. And when we're talking creator ETs, you know, our ancestors, early ancestors might have called them ET gods. How long ago was this?
Oh my gosh, that's the thing. I don't know if you can actually put time to it.
Okay.
Because time just doesn't really exists. And I think it can change because it's always like a figure eight. So there's never a beginning and never an end. It's just constantly going over and over itself.
But it must have been before the early hominins were on the planet. You know, it's like deep into Earth's early evolution as a planet itself.
Right.
So it must be millions of years ago.
Oh, definitely millions of years ago. Okay. And then before any of the humans, they created the Sphinx or different Sphinx like statues or whatever, just to keep track of the population, record the information. And it became like a broadcast system that would go out to other planets, and it would harness and magnetize energy and store different things within it because of the energy that the Sphinx was built on.
Okay. So we want to focus on Atlantis, but Lemuria or Lemuria, which is what you call it, is a very, very key part of Atlantis, because even though it's much older, they interacted with each other, didn't they?
Right. I had always wanted to know why. So when Jen had her first session, she remembered being an important part of the ruling party in Lemuria. And she had never heard of this place before. And in her sessions, they called it Amun, almost like Amen.
Interesting. But
also Lemuria. So it was interesting. So she remembered being part of this ruling party. And then there were visitors from Atlantis that showed up during her lifetime there. And they never gave the Atlanteans what it was that they wanted, because they simply couldn't. And the Atlanteans were very upset, took Jen as a prisoner. This is her memory. And then destroyed that whole civilization with these very humongous tidal waves. They weren't regular tidal waves, because the Atlanteans were using special technology where they were using almost like an atomic bomb that they put off in rifts under the ocean to create massive tidal waves that were able to sink the whole continent. And Lemuria was different than Atlantis, because Atlantis had technology left over from an earlier group of colonizers. And I'm talking about the very last Atlantis, because I'm sure it spanned for so many thousands of years.
The one that Plato talks about, the last one. Yeah.
Right. And Lemuria didn't have the same technology that Atlantis did. So Lemuria was very advanced spiritually. I mean, they were such, according to so many of my clients who don't know one another, they would be regressed to this time period in Lemuria. And it was so compassionate. It was a matriarchal society. I mean, so fascinating, because I felt like, how do these people know this? They've never met, they've never read anything on these places before, but yet they're talking about the same things, the same types of civilizations, the same types of memories.
How are you taking them back as a group? Are you just saying, I want you to check this out, this time period? Or, you know, I mean, because Lemuria is also considered Mu, and there's a lot of other different native names for it. But when you talk to your clients about going back to Lemuria, how do you go about doing that?
Oh my God, I'm glad you asked that question, because I never led them. I never said, let's go back to Lemuria or let's go back to Atlantis. I would just give them a regression and have their higher consciousness go to the most important place and time, not leading them in any way.
Because, oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. And, you know, it was so crazy, because as I was getting all this information from Jen, I started to notice this weird, I thought it was a coincidence. I started noticing that all these people were coming to have a session and going back to these same time periods. And I would ask my other QHHT practitioner friends, do you get like most people going back to like Atlantis or Lemuria? And they said, no, that's really weird. And I thought, that is really weird.
That's not because according to the myths, Lemuria expired 28,000 years ago. I mean, it's not a recent event. It's a very, very old place. So you must be tapping in, and your technique must be tapping in And their guidance and your guidance must be saying, okay, we want to start here because this lifetime is important in this lifetime. Or that lifetime is important. Oh my gosh,
there are so many people walking the planet right now that have had past lifetimes during those final days because we're supposed to come together again and do this differently. Because humanity doesn't evolve like in a straight line. It evolves in cycles. So the fact that so many of us are doing this again right now is good because it means we're evolving to a different level. And so many people, it's so shocking, but so many people have memories in their subconscious of these time periods.
It's so amazing. You said something that's very interesting, and it's kind of a theme throughout your book, which is that a civilization evolves, and then if it's not doing well, the overseers will say, okay, we're going to throw in some disease or some problems. We're going to have a gigantic earth-wide catastrophe, and then we're going to come back and start again. Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's amazing, because I've always thought, well, it's just nature. We're going to get bombed, or there's going to be a tsunami, or there's something going to happen that wipes out humanity.
Yeah, no, not at all. What I've heard from these higher beings is that we're supposed to do it where we have balance. It's all about the balance of the masculine and feminine aspect. And in Atlantis, it was unbalanced. In Lemuria, it was unbalanced. And we've tried so many times to like rebalance ourselves, and we've done it wrong. But what I've heard is that we're finally doing it. What we're supposed to do is advance with our technology and advance with our spirituality. And we're supposed to combine the two. And we're supposed to move forward in our future in that way, combining it and learning about both, not just advancing with one. Because even like the gray aliens, they apparently, well, are our forefathers and were theirs, but they advanced too fast with their technology and they didn't advance at all with their emotions. They left behind their emotions and it caused them to become weak. So essentially they're trying to help us as well. I mean, so many beings are trying to help us create this balance as we move forward, because it seems like a lot of beings are very happy about our progress right now. And then I keep hearing we're doing a great job. It doesn't look like that.
It doesn't feel like it. We'll get to the ETs at the end if we have some time. Let's talk about some of the early periods of Atlantis. Of course, you can't give dates, but let's talk about the importance that crystal technology played in Atlantis. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So the very last founder of Atlantis was an extraterrestrial, crash landed his ship in the Utah area, like in a quarry. And he didn't have enough technology to signal his home planet. And he didn't have enough technology to really do anything at the moment. So he went through one of the ancient transport devices, and that brought him to Atlantis. When he got to this place he would call Atlantis, he luckily found some leftover technology from an earlier group of extraterrestrial colonizers. And he set up his own crystal grid, his own system that he used in Atlantis, because it mimicked what he had on his own home planet. That was why it was designed in the way it was. And that was why it was so advanced. It was because he simply could not get home. So he tried to replicate what he had on that home planet. And they had these very special crystals that was like gold to them. I mean, it was so valuable. You could basically do anything with these crystals.
Because they stored data and knowledge, and or they could teach, I guess. There was some kind of a consciousness in them at that point, right?
Definitely. You could use them for anything. Apparently, they're just too powerful for humans to have at this time. Even the little subgroups of, the government or whatever can't even hold on to them. They're too tough for humans to have.
So if the Atlanteans destroyed Lemuria, that's 28,000 years ago. At that time, that would have been the second phase of Atlantis. There were three phases. One, the first phase is a couple hundred thousand years. The second one ends, I guess, 28,000, 29,000. And then there's the final one that ends 12,000 years. But on the ones that you talk about is the second period and the final period. What was what developed, how did the people develop to be such technologists? I mean, why that they kind of lose it and become technologists and, you know, wanting to destroy and control and manipulate human beings and creating these animal humans. I mean, what happened?
I know, it was so unbalanced. It was this greed, this power, this takeover, and it was the suppression of the, you know, the feminine, basically, the suppression of like the emotional body and compassion. And it became Atlantis became towards the end a very power hungry and elitist group of people. But I had always wondered why the Atlanteans wanted anything to do with the Lemurians. Why would they want something from a civilization that wasn't advanced? Because Atlantis was really advanced. Why would they want to destroy the Lemuria? And it turns out there was a really deadly virus going on in Atlantis towards the end of times. And this virus was so terrible that people were dying. It was almost like cholera. And I'd always wondered why my clients recounted smog when they would get to Atlantis during this time. They wouldn't be able to see the sun clearly. And that was because they were burning bodies because of this virus. And so the Atlanteans had, you know, before this, been doing tons of experiments, and there were other viruses because of all the experiments that they were doing. But they had been watching the Lemurians, and they noticed something. They noticed that they had some special type of immunity, because on the continent of Lemuria, they were given from the star people, they said, where they wouldn't get sick, they wouldn't get viruses. And the Atlanteans wanted this technology. They thought it was technology. So they wanted to get whatever it was that was causing the Lemurians to have this immunity. So that was what they came to Lemuria with. They wanted to help. They wanted some help for this deadly virus. But the Lemurians couldn't give this technology to the Atlanteans. And because it was a gift, it was the way that the star people had given them these red crystals. And the Lemurians were also not allowed to give these crystals to the Atlanteans. They were told no when they would go into these special meditations. But that was what they were so upset about. So that was why they destroyed, when they couldn't get what they wanted. That's why they destroyed. And so many of my clients have these deep rooted phobias and fears of the water, or of like tidal waves, or they remember it almost consciously of, you know, drowning in that time because it was so devastating. It was such a beautiful society. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was really interesting as Jen and I were getting this information was that they developed a vaccine, which I thought was really interesting, in Atlantis. And it seemed like a huge success. Can I talk about that or no?
Yeah, I want you to. Just keep rolling.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about, you know, what happened in Atlantis. So it was a huge success at first. It seemed like everything was wonderful. They created this vaccine using animal DNA, and it was different than a regular vaccine nowadays, where it was a slit in the arm and animal DNA and this vaccine. And these vaccine ingredients were placed into the arm, and there was like a putty-like substance that went over it. And it was mandatory. Everyone got it. And, you know, they were very happy until the first set of babies started being born with these horrific side effects, where they were having these babies born with animal parts, or they would be missing parts, or they would have like cat-like features, or all kinds of issues.
Is this where they Taurus came about, and these half human, half animal creatures that are mythologies?
You know, partly because, yes, this was happening after the vaccine experiments, but they were already doing these experiments before this last really horrific vaccine experiment gone wrong. They already had many different beings that they created, you know, like centaurs and stuff. And people have memories of them. That's why, you know, that's why it's not really myth. These are memories. They had such advanced technology because, again, it came from an extraterrestrial crash landed. But this vaccine experiment gone wrong was so detrimental, because what happened was eventually they started killing these people. They needed to accept these people, but it was never really something that they were able to accept, because during the time of Atlantis, if you looked different than a very white person, you were excluded. You weren't considered an Atlantean. So they were very judgmental at that time. I'm sure there's other beautiful times in Atlantis, but just the very end, it seemed like that was the general experience for most people.
Pretty ugly. It's pretty ugly. I want to go back a little bit. I worked with Native Maya years ago, and they have in their history quite forthright speaking about working with star people. And we don't hear about that because it's like, oh, yeah, the star people. Yeah, right. You know, but this is a big theme that keeps coming up. It seems like, and you're telling me that it's happening in Atlantis, it seems like this is a theme that has continued for thousands of years. And it's maybe continuing now, but we just don't know about it.
Oh, my gosh. That's what the higher consciousness that have been coming through have been giving information through my clients about my next book, all about that. So that's funny.
All right, give us a hint.
Well, it seems to be about that, about the tribes in the sky, you know, all the influence and the really important tribal information and the history of Americas and stuff like that. Just okay. The ancient stories. But yeah, that's basically what would happen, because the star people would always come and help us, and they're helping us now again. Always.
We just don't know about it. It's like, you know, the government's covering it up to such a huge level that we're not allowed. This is the big problem. I talk about this all the time on my show. It's like, okay, the government's changing UFOs to UAPs, unidentified aerial. Well, why are they doing that? Well, who knows? We don't know. Well, they know. They're changing it. And then here they go. Months ago, they're looking to the priests to tell them, how are people going to react when the aliens come to say, hey, we're here? Well, just let them come down and tell us. I mean, I think the Pentagon's hiding. They're hiding something huge, but who knows?
Oh, my gosh. Of course.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our guest, Sarah Breckman Cosmi.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you.
I'm speaking with Sarah Breckman Cosme. She has written a book on Atlantis. She is a hypnotist who has found incredible results by regressing people and dealing with their past lives. This is a really fascinating look at the lives people live and how they contribute to the physical life here on Earth.
You can make your own contact. It didn't seem to be that hard. One way they did that in Lemuria was they used the flower of life symbol. All those patterns, you know, those sacred symbols, they're actually keys, according to my clients, under hypnosis. So you can use them for your own introspection. Like the flower of life symbol, all you have to do is stare at it, and it's almost like a coded key. And what it does is it unlocks something within your mind to allow you to have transmission to wherever your home planet is. So you stare at it and you think of a question and you see what comes to you. It's pretty interesting.
Talk a little bit about the technology that your clients revealed to you that the Atlantinians had. Casey says they had submarines and ships of all kinds. And talk a little bit about what your clients mentioned.
My clients would remember this type of propulsion energy where they could get the energy from the earth, from the free energy within the earth, mostly like from volcanoes or even mountains. This type of energy would come up through the earth. And it's an energy that apparently they still use sometimes. And it would be sucked up into these giant fans. It was really interesting. They would describe them as fans on the bottom of their ships. And what it would do is suck it up. And then there was a conduit, like a magnet, and that would help them propel their ship wherever they wanted to go. But they used a lot of propulsion type technology. They also had a lot of crystal technology where they set up these different crystal grids. And that's what powered their civilization. They had a system of moats too for their fresh water. So the water would come in from the outermost ring. And when it would get to the middle ring, it would be fresh water and it would propel the salt outwards. They had a lot of technology like that. They had so much technology because there's a lot you can do with the red crystals, basically.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the red crystals in a minute. You have a section on the Atlantis book where you go to, or your clients go to Egypt. How influential was the Atlantinian group with the pre-dynastic Egyptians? Were they huge, or is it just more of a slight influence?
It was huge. It was huge, and you can still see that influence today, even with the. The beings that escaped from Atlantis that had animal side effects after the vaccine experiment gone wrong, there were especially these children that were born with cat-like features. And there's also influence from extraterrestrials called the Lyrans, apparently. But what I received from the Atlantis influence was these kids that had these cat-like features. They had these special abilities. And I thought that was really interesting. After the vaccine gone wrong, produced these devastating effects, it also produced these abilities in these children. So they had something that was considered a disability, but actually they had these special abilities that regular people didn't have. Like even that's happening nowadays with savants, you know, they've opened a channel in their mind that regular people don't have. And that's considered a disability, but it's actually an ability. But anyway, they went to Egypt because Egypt was basically, well, the Sphinx of Egypt was the outpost of Atlantis. So they could walk along a sandbar because North Africa was seen as a lone sandbar that went from Atlantis to the Sphinx. And so they could, walk there basically. But when they got there, they started to use their minds in different ways because they had so many different abilities and they created all these things that you see in Egypt today. So anyway, basically, long story short, there were a lot of people who did survive Atlantis did go to Egypt because it was the closest place.
Okay, so there's a transfer of technology to those pre-dynastic Egyptians. And you were there. I mean, there must be temples that you went there and said, oh, my God, I that place looks very familiar. Because I've been there, and some of those temples are not only are they ancient, they're like prehistoric. They're so old. Have you seen any place like that when you were there?
The whole time I was there, it was pretty much mind blown. That was me. 100%. I loved it. I want to go back. But yes, it was amazing. It was so you could feel the energy, you can feel the ancientness of it. Yeah. And you can feel yourself tied to it, which I think is so cool when you go to Egypt.
Hmm. Talk about the lessons that your clients are that the soul is trying to get through to your clients. And like, in other words, if someone was in Atlantis and they were traumatized by the destruction, how do you get the healing through? That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. One of the ways that my clients' higher selves have said they could get the healing through, you know, do this differently, is to just hear this information basically, or just to, you know, become conscious of it, because sometimes we unconsciously carry around so much trauma. We don't know what it is that's triggering us, but what all these events that are happening or just happened with, especially with the virus and all that stuff, you know, it's supposed to trigger us so that we can kind of go into ourselves a little bit and start to release different things that don't serve us, if that makes sense. So basically, yeah, we're just supposed to get curious about ourselves and follow our feelings and see where they take us so we can release it. But that's one of the biggest reasons why I wrote these books, is because I know it doesn't take much to really heal, you know, to help people heal on different levels. All someone really has to do is to read something, hear about it. And you can just release so much trauma just through that. You don't have to physically remember anything. Have you ever done that? Have you ever read a book or heard information and it just kind of changes something about you and you feel like you released years and years of trauma?
I like what you're saying. It's I haven't thought of it like that. But I mean, you are telling us is the human condition is designed to release trauma when there's an aha moment, or you hear music, or you read something, or you're in a place where there's a beauty of some kind. Maybe that's why we need to be in nature more often, is the fact
that living
in the city is bad.
Well, you know, even looking at art, it can release trauma. I mean, it doesn't take much. And I know this because it happened to me, because I was doing a regression on somebody who recognized me in a past life and I healed something. And I didn't have to physically remember it or go through the session myself. And so I thought to myself, wow, if that could help me, then I bet sharing this information can help a lot of other people, you know, without them having to do much. And I know that it does, because people have gotten back to me and told me, you know, I read your book and I healed my eyesight. Someone literally told me that.
That's pretty cool.
And then, you know, somebody else healed their strange cough. Whatever, but you don't even have to read my book. This information is coming out through so many different avenues.
No, but your books are triggering people. I mean, you have so many accolades. I saw them in Amazon. All of them, almost all of them, 90% of them are very, very positive. Like I had people are saying, oh my God, this is amazing. I relate to what you say. And other people are saying, yes, I've had dreams about being in these places. So you're touching people on very, very deep levels that typically are not accessible, because people don't allow material to get that deep. You know, we're all blocked because we don't know what to expect, you know?
Right. Well, essentially, I'm not the one writing these books. I'm just formatting them and I'm the hypnotist, but it's not written by me. I'm just the humble.
But you're writing you're asking the questions. And
I'm asking the questions.
Yeah, which is triggering people. You know, they're not going to tell you if you're not going to spill, you know. Hey, something that came up in listening to your Atlantis version, it seems like these periods of time I mentioned in the beginning are cyclic, or they're in cycles. It feels to me like where we're at right now as a culture, and I'm talking about the United States, it seems like it's kind of an ancient part of Atlantis with a sprinkling of Lemuria in it.
That's what that's what I've heard too. And we're all back again to do this differently, because after those civilizations perished, there was so much karma, so much trauma, so much unfulfilled, you know, destinies to account for that. Yeah. We all decided, when are we going to all try this again? So we got together in the afterlife. Probably most of the people you see on the street are part of it too. And we said, let's get back together now and do things differently. And so everything seems to be cyclical. And that's what we're doing right now.
It's so funny.
Look good when you look around, or if you ever watch the news, but I've been told opposite. I've been told different things.
Seems kind of, the United States, and here we got this Ukrainian and Russian fighting going on. There seems like a little pockets of unrest that maybe were, you know, bound to happen eventually or something. Hard to say.
Well, chaos really helps people grow. I mean, unfortunately. And the higher beings that have come through, clients have said things are going to be chaotic until they get better. And that's kind of how most humans learn. You know, they have to be kind of go through chaos or trials and tribulations till they are forced to make a change, you know. And I think that's kind of what's happening. But once we make this change and we head into this other direction, apparently it's going to be amazing. I mean, that's what I keep hearing.
I hope it's in my lifetime, because we've had a last few decades of problem children everywhere. So yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Hey, in the readings that you have, where are the energy points today? Because Atlantis, Lemuria, off-world influences are going to certain, we see them in certain places, or like in Mexico, where I go off and on, there's places that you can see them coming out of mountains and stuff like that. But is there places that you've heard about that are real energy centers?
Oh my gosh. Well, basically all over the place. There's pyramids underneath the ground. There's so many different energy centers, different vortexes, different portals, but especially places where there's mountains and volcanoes, I'm sure, because if you're talking about extraterrestrials, the ones that use that specific energy, you might see them around there a lot because they harness the energy from these areas, apparently. But where the Bermuda Triangle is where the capital was, according to my clients. And so that's why all kinds of stuff goes haywire over there.
Strange,
because there's
energy.
Still that ancient technology there. It's still there.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that. I've always thought that the Bermuda Triangle was someone left the machine on when the you know, and so there's a plane flying over and disappeared into another dimension. Which isn't funny, because if you're on that plane, hey, I don't want to go anywhere, especially if I can't get back, you know?
Right, I know.
Like, geez. Well,
apparently, it would be something you would have chosen since you are the creator of your reality. Oh, but once you get to the afterlife, you realize it's all created anyway.
Talk about the Watchers. Now, you bring them up a lot. And I mean, I'm very comfortable talking about ETs. I don't emphasize them a great deal, because I think that their Earth Ancients is based on advanced humans that were on the Earth thousands of years ago. But my mentor always told me the Maya had a lot of help from star people. So, I mean, I need to kind of bend a little bit.
Well, I think you're totally correct, because essentially they are human. I mean, we're all the same, just look different. Like, even if you look at a gray alien, that's us in the future without a planet. You know, that's what we look like when we don't have sunlight, or we don't eat, our mouth gets smaller. You're looking at a human, basically, in the future.
Oh, is that what a gray is? It's a many thousands of 100,000 years in advance?
Yes, but because there is no time and everything is cyclical, they are our future, but we are also their future. So they're helping us because we're, you know, their future, and so are they. It's really mind-blowing.
It gets crazy. So the Watchers are this ancient race who they're in some different time zone, or not zone, but a different dimension or something. Where are they?
I don't know what you would call where they are. I think they're everywhere.
Okay.
All of those places and once. They can be anywhere. They are basically the Watchers are the ones that are helping this experiment, like the ones that are the creator beings, the ones that are overseeing everything to make sure there's no interference. I guess some people call them the Galactic Federation.
Oh, really? I mean, the problem with a lot of this material is that there are people that have spun it so weirdly. And so there's books on the Ashtar Command of Aliens. And then there's the, you know, the TV shows, the Federation of Planets. And I mean, I wish there was a Federation of Planets, and I wish the Pentagon would say, here on Mars, on the moon, there's ruins of ancient cultures and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
We're told, you know, it's all vanilla. It's like, there's no aliens. There's no other beings on any other worlds. We're all by ourselves. And just to say that, not only is it rude, I think it's destructive.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, if you don't really know who you really are, then you think that you're just this human body. If you don't really know that you're actually part of this huge group and that you've been doing this for so long and that you're an ancient collective consciousness, then you think, oh my gosh, I must listen to what everybody tells me to do. I must continuously be like a slave, basically. And then when you actually learn like who you really are, or you have memories of these other lifetimes, or you remember being, I don't know, an advanced human, then you think so differently about yourself and about life. But it's one way, I think, to keep humans small and keep them doing the same thing. Why not?
You must get so much information, Sarah. You get all this information, and then you read the paper. Oh, those are tricks of the eye. UFOs are there's nothing there. Why are you asking these questions? You know, it's like, get real, people. I mean, it's almost, doesn't it frustrate you?
I mean, I guess it doesn't. I just see it as a big game. I can see what role they're playing in, because also if you look at it from the perspective of the people that really need this information, or that it would benefit them a lot, they have to get to the point where everything seems too ridiculous for them to look at this information. I mean, it's getting more and more ridiculous to deny this stuff. You know, it's harder to be that part, you know, that just denies everything, I think. And so the more it becomes too ridiculous, then it will help them, I think. It will help them and allow them to start looking into this information, you know.
I think you should write a book on how to live life, you know. And it's funny because you describe through your clients, or your clients describe how they lived, how they died in many cases, what was unfinished. And I mean, talk a little bit about your understanding of the soul's journey.
Oh, it's really fascinating. So from my understanding to clients is that we each come in to be an individual, have this individual experience, but really we're not individual, but this is fun. So we're really focused in this 3D video game, you know, to have the full experience. We have to pretend we're individual for a little while, and we want to experience everything. We want the highs, the lows, everything, because it helps our soul expand to a different level, almost, so to speak. And it helps us almost like you're trying to get as many experiences under your belt as you can, because this is such a fun video game. And you're the one that basically designs it with like a group, or the Watchers, whatever you want to call that group. Names are hard because everybody might call that group different things. You know, a lot of higher beings don't go by a specific name. It's just they use thought to understand what it is. But so the soul comes in, wants to learn a certain thing, but it's also learning something else through a different life at the same time. And it could also be an extraterrestrial or advanced human at the same time. And each is physically focused, having its very own unique experience while doing that also in a different plane of existence. But then after it goes through its life cycle, you know, and decides when it wants to die, which seems as if every soul chooses this. And there are different exit points you can choose. There aren't any accidents, it seems like. Everybody has an idea of where your exit point is and when your expiration is when you come into this life. Then you get together with all that is basically the rest of your soul, and you go over your lifetime and you see how you did and what kind of things you wanted to learn and what you accomplished. And then you go about choosing your next life. And sometimes you don't want to come back to Earth. Sometimes you want to go bliss out on a different planet.
It's so funny. I mean, you got material for a lot of new books coming out, I guess. How many books you got in the works now? Like five or six?
No. I just published my second one and I'm working on my third. But there's all this information that's so valuable. You know, I want to help people understand who they really are, because these extraterrestrials have this, you know, when a client has a memory of being an extraterrestrial on a different planet, it gives like a whole different light to extraterrestrials. You know, yeah. It shares the consciousness, their actual memories. And sometimes a client will come in and remember being an extraterrestrial and have these experiences, and they'll heal something in their current life. So, I mean, how could they possibly heal something if they weren't literally remembering something? You know?
That's a great point. And what you're saying is something I've never thought about before. If our soul is interdimensional, we can incarnate as an alien, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's so amazing. So why don't we have more contact with our off-world brothers?
Well, we do.
Maybe we are. Physically.
We're just, you know, our off-world brothers know us very well. So I think
we're the children of planet Earth.
And plus, you have to remember this is a game. So this is a journey of remembering for each one of us. And we want to make this really fun. Not fun, but really, we want to really be physically in this game. So we don't want to make it too easy. You know, if we had all this contact and they were saying, hey, Sarah, you know, if you just did this and that, you would win $1 million. They don't want to do that, because this is a game for all these experiences. They want to let us have our experiences, but they often contact us in our sleep, you know, putting thoughts in our mind that would benefit us. They're always there. If you ever want them there, you just ask. Apparently, that's what I've heard.
That's fascinating. As a hypnotist, what have you learned about a soul's journey? And specifically, I'm asking this question, when we incarnate physically, what are the lifetimes that are influencing us? Is it been predetermined prior to incarnating that you're going to use this and this and this, or how does it work?
So oftentimes if there's a lesson that we want to learn in our current lifetime, we'll carry over a little trauma from a different lifetime. And that will just be a key to the root cause of this information. It just gets us curious about ourselves. All these different things are keys, are like little, you know, symbols that we've dropped and left for ourselves. Basically, we're the ones hiding all of it from ourselves so that we can find it again.
Oh, that's really weird. And the other thing I was thinking, if you had lived hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, and you talk a lot about this in your book, people have had thousands and thousands of lifetimes. Obviously, you don't want to remember all of them. There's certain keys that you want to bring into, I guess, you, before you incarnate, you pick and choose from a shelf. I want this and this, and I want this and I want this, because I want to learn something. And then you incarnate with those tools. And then until they meet someone like you, everything else is kind of like hidden or behind a curtain. right?
Right. Yeah, well, you know, the higher consciousness always brings a person back to the one time period that's most important for them to uncover. And like you said, they'll be like the ones that are most fresh under the surface in the subconscious, because they're tools to help them with this current lifetime. And some clients have never had a lifetime. In fact, Dolores started finding this out in her work, that there were so many volunteers, and there's so many volunteers that haven't really had an earthly lifetime here before. And you can always pick them out. I mean, everything.
Well, let me stop you for a minute. What does that person look like? Are they a baby soul, or who's just very immature, or just what? Just guessing all the time?
Not totally the opposite. They just have difficulties with Earth, because it's so different where they're from. I mean, they came here to Earth to help raise the consciousness, raise the frequency, because they're very highly advanced beings.
Oh, okay.
But they're not used to Earth. So Earth is really challenging and difficult. You know, those people that just can't seem to get it together, but they're super high vibratory. You're just, why can't they get their life together? So people, and also sometimes people that are just so sensitive. I mean, they just come in with abilities, but they haven't had a lifetime here on Earth before. So everything is super challenging for them in regards to like violence. They can't even watch, you know, TV, or they can't handle any violence because there's no violence where they're from, and they have to get used to certain things. Some of these people I've heard in sessions have really cold hands, a lot of times they had a challenging birth for some reason, because their energy just didn't match the mother's energy. So, you know, ask your mom, how was my birth? See, but there's so many volunteers here right now on the planet, because it's so important to the rest of the universe that we do it right this time.
The book is A Hypnotist's Journey to Atlantis. And then the other book's A Journey to The Secrets of the Sphinx. My guest today has been Sarah Breskman Cosme, and she's coming from Florida. What do you want to leave us with, Sarah? What wisdom do you have for us to leave by?
You know, one of the things I think is important for people to understand is that when the higher consciousness comes to, they say, you know, human beings are not supposed to be perfect. They're supposed to be a mess. That's their job. They came here to be messy. And so, you know, when you leave this life and you go back to the other side, you realize that the whole life was just created, imagined for these experiences. And you're not supposed to be perfect. You're supposed to have a full life full of all different experiences. You can't do it wrong. And then when you go back to the in-between, you realize that everything you did, this whole big mess, was absolutely beautiful. So try not to worry about being perfect. Just have your experience, you know, and it helps everyone. Every single thing you do helps every single person.
What do your clients say about the near future? What can we expect globally?
Well, what my clients have been saying, and I've been super curious about this, is that the chaos will lead to us reuniting. Basically, we need the chaos and we need all this discord, just because it's going to create this questioning in the mind and this want and desire to reunite ourselves. And the future seems amazing as far as what the higher consciousness says, that we're doing it right this time and we're rebalancing. You can see that there's less feminine suppression happening right now. And there's a rebalancing of like the masculine and feminine, that you might not see it yet, but that's what's happening. And that we're moving into a beautiful time on this earth. Everything will be great. And we'll have the technology that can clean up our oceans, and the technology that can help us heal one another. But we're also going to advance with our spirituality. And you can see that happening with people really going into themselves and understanding who they are, and you know, trying to become more enlightened person. So the two of those combined, that's the most powerful thing that we can do. And we're doing it.
Great fun, Sarah. Much success on this journey you're on. And let's have you back.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks again. I'd love to be back.
I am firmly in the belief that at some point we'll develop some kind of technology to be able to reach beyond the conscious physical level into other domains and reincarnated lives, or the lives that we live will be laid out to us so that we can work with them a little closer. That was a lot of fun to have Sarah on the program. She's going to be back. She's finishing another book, and we'll probably have her back in the fall, maybe next year. Always fun to have a light spirit like that. And she is really old soul for a young person. I had a lot of fun with her. And I think she had fun too. So yeah, those books are available on Amazon. Actually, look for her name, Sarah Breckman, Breckman, Cosme, Cosme, The Hypnotist's Journey to Atlantis, and then The Hypnotist's Journey to the Sphinx. And that's the most recent book. So that was a lot of fun. Hey, if you're enjoying Earth Angels, please consider becoming a subscriber. For as little as $5 a month, you can support the work we do here on Earth Angels. And I got to tell you, we have Destiny every Wednesday, Earth Angels, and then we do the special editions, the archives, twice a month. And it takes a lot of resources, a lot of manpower. And it is a challenge sometimes to keep the lights on. So $5, $10, $15, even $20 a month is helpful. We make it really easy for you. You just give us an ATM card and it's automatically deducted from your account. To become a subscriber, go to Patreon. That's patreon.com/Earth Ancients, and you can register there. And as a subscriber, we have a ton of ebooks, many from the authors that we interview here on the program. And I make sure that every 30 to 60 months, we put a new ebook there for you to check out and download as our thank you gift. We also have unpublished interviews, some galleries, and occasionally we have conversations with me, conversations with Cliff, where you can ask me questions and things like that. We really appreciate it, and we really can use your support to and becoming a subscriber helps. Patreon.com/Earth Ancients. I want to thank the following people who have become subscribers in the last few months. I want to thank Bonnie Franklin, Chris Whalen, Billy Chestnut, Mark Friend, Zadok Rune, the Fantasy Group Academy, Emma Beaton, and Dennis Leroy German. Thank you all for your donations. You guys rock, and I really, really appreciate it. Hey, we got a tour coming up. It's our Mexico tour. We're making it easy for you this year. We're going to have it during the, I guess you could call it the Labor Day weekend. It's September 2nd through the 13th. We all meet in Mexico City, and this is a guided tour of some of the most amazing ruins from Mesoamerica. We're going to visit the Anthropological Museum in Mexico City. We're going to see Templo Mayor, which is an Aztec ruin that has recently been excavated. Then we jump in a plane and we head to Villa Hermosa, where the land of the Olmec is. Then we head south and we hang out in Palenque, and that is a fabulous place. From there, we bus to Campeche and Edzna, one of the most gorgeous Maya ruins and great cities to check out. By the way, most of the places we go to allow you to climb the temples, the pyramids, and the buildings, which is really impactful because a lot of these places are still active. So that's really a big plus. And also, I'll show you how to plug into these places with a technique that I've learned. And I'll tell you, it'll really spark you. From Campeche, we go to Yucatan, and that means Uxmal, the Labna, and the Puuc Trail. And of course, we'll see the grand queen of them all. That's Chichen Itza, and we'll spend part of a day there as well. For more information and details with the itinerary, go to earthancients.com/tours. You'll see the full itinerary. Get your deposit in and join us. We're only taking a few people, 20, maybe 25 at the most. This allows for really optimal visits and sightings and connecting with these ancient places. earthancients.com/tours. All right, that's it for this week. I want to thank my guest, Sarah Breckman-Cosme, and that was a lot of fun. As always, our team of Ruth Thomas, Mark Foster, and everyone who edits and does the production. You guys rock! And I mean that, too. You guys really make it happen. All right, take care, be well, and we'll talk to you next time.